Succession number 20306, Reel 2.
Ray Robinson, Reel 2. How did your corporals behave towards the men?
In the training?
Yes.
No problem. No problem. I've never found no problem. I think if you do as you're told and try to learn what their job is actually, because obviously it's going to help you when you do go into action or whatever.
Did you have any contact with the local population in Northumberland?
No, because, well, I found that, to be quite honest, Ray, I found that nobody seemed to want to talk to you in these little villages. I think they was away from the war, you know, up there. And what I did find, what really disgusted me at the time was, we wasn't allowed in the local pub, you see. And I always said you could fight and die for these people, but they wouldn't let you drink in the pubs. No, I can't ever remember even saying good morning to any of the population in there.
How long were you at Long Framlington for?
10 weeks.
And then what?
Then it was 2 weeks embarkation leave and over to Belgium, Ostend.
About what date was that?
Well, we had our... The good thing about it, we got Christmas at home. 2 weeks embarkation leave, and I think the day after Boxing Day, we had to report back. And we went, and this is what made me laugh. We had to report back to Rothbury.
Rothbury? What's that?
This was near Long Framlington.
A village?
A village. No, it's a little town, actually. Rothbury would be very near Long Framlington. A matter of a few miles. And we stayed there for about maybe 2 to 3 days. Wasn't doing much. The main thing we did was these NCOs was just, you know, more or less seniors turned out okay with your packs and your uniform and everything, your equipment. I also remember my memory is that was putting your battle order, getting in battle order, pouches and pack and everything. And two of them, one at each side, putting your belt round and pressing in that hard that your body was like a 14-inch waist. And coming on, I'll tell you a result of that. Because when we sailed from Tilbury, actually, on the Thames, on New Year's night, we travelled from Doncaster Station, the main station, through to London, and on one of the tubes through to somewhere else, and then through to Tilbury. And it was only a coast that we sailed on. We was in like one of the halls, the metal halls, and we must have sailed when it was dark, about 11 to 12 o'clock, New Year's night. Reaching Ostend out sometime 5 or whatever in the morning, going into a barracks there. And then I was getting a little bit of pain in my waist at the side. And when I managed to look, I had like a little, it was like a wart actually. And it got bigger. And it was seeping like a greyish, thick, well, paste it was like. So I reported sick. And by that time, we only stayed in Ostend about 1, maybe 2 days. By that time, we'd travelled to Louvain, in Belgium. So it was getting worse then, so I reported sick. And then he sent me to a little local hospital. And I was in there about 10 days and they cut it off.
What did they say it was?
They didn't, actually. But from there, I joined the regiment on the River Maas at a little town called Maastricht.
Was this blister caused by the tight belt?
I think so. When two people press it that hard, as I say, my waist was... Well, I released it after a while, like, because I couldn't stand it. But it seemed all right after that. But then when it started giving me pain, and I reported sick at Ostend, travelled through to Louvain, and then straight into this little hospital.
Why had they tied your belt so tight?
Well, I think this was a little bit of viciousness on the part. Personally, I'd had no trouble with NCOs right up to that point, up to going back on leave. I think they wanted to, you know, just so there was NCOs. Because that's all they had to do. They weren't doing no training there.
So was this thing some kind of blister?
It was like a little wart, actually. Anyway, what's your... I've still got the scar on my side now, actually. Well, it's been all right since then, like.
So, you said you went to Maastricht?
I joined a battalion at Maastricht, which was a situation where I believe we was at one side of the River Maas and the Germans were at the other side, which was a quiet time of the war then. There was no... Everything was closed down. There was a lot of... It was snowing and it was misty and foggy, and all that we was doing was patrols. We was wearing white, like a white boiler suit, because it was snow on the fields and everything, like.
Which battalion were you with?
The second. I was in D Company, 16th Platoon. I was there.
How was a patrol organised?
Well, it was just your section. Three sections in a... I was in 16th Platoon, which was formed with three sections of roughly 10 men. That's just your... If you was, you know, if you had no casualties before or whatever, like. If you'd been through anything before. I know they'd had a pretty tough time before that time. They'd had a big battle in Holland for two major towns or cities, which was Venrege and Overloon, which I missed, actually. But that was a big deal that had. They'd lost a lot of casualties there, in killed and wounded.
What was the morale like in the battalion when you joined it?
Oh, we was all right, you know. We got to know the what we call the old lads. Of course, I joined them with a lot of us. We're a lot of reinforcements. I think I joined with about 30-odd reinforcements. Travelled with about 30-odd reinforcements through from England to Ostend and Louvain, and joining them there at in the front line there.
Did all the reinforcements come from Hull?
No. I didn't know a great many from Hull. I think maybe about five or six, if I remember right. But you see, then there was maybe spread out to different companies, you see. I think there was only two of us from Hull who joined D Company.
How did you feel about going out on patrol?
Very scared, actually. You didn't know what you're going into, you see. It's all right knowing if you know where the enemy's in front of, but you never knew. But we got through all right. I know some of the lads did have a little... If I can just put in now, I think I always found out that they was like us, the Germans. You could possibly come across footsteps where it'd probably been the enemy's patrol. I think if they wanted a quiet life, they won't do nothing, you see. You know, I don't think a matter of meeting a patrol and having a good go at them, you know, having a battle with them, I think anything for a quiet life. I think that was that's what I found anyway. Keep clear. If they're going to have a battle, like, you know, if you're going to actually into action, fair enough, you had to do what you could. But I think in them circumstances, if they spotted you, they'd probably keep clear. I think the only time if they did want on, if they had orders to go out and fetch a prisoner in or something like that. But I never had no problem, like, no experience of meeting any. It was just very quiet, quite time of the war.
Were you sleeping out in the open?
No, actually, in Maastricht, it was like a little. It was on the River Maas, like a little port, I found out. But in them days, it was very old houses and that, and they'd been shelled and everything. And our headquarters was in a factory, and just opposite there was a little row of bombed houses, just these old chamfers in those days. No roofs on and no windows in it and everything, so you just used to find a quiet area of the wooden floor and just clear it of bricks or whatever and glass whatever and just bed down. In El Palias, you just had a palias, which was on these little striped bags and filled with straw.
Did you say a chamfer?
No, well, what we call a chamfer and where we used to live was a house, two up and two down. We used to call them in the old days chamfers, which was the old front room, living room, and two little bedrooms. Possibly no scullery, or maybe Chinese scullery, which you could sling a cat round. But the Germans' houses were more or less the same.
Were there any inhabitants around there?
No, there was nobody at all. No.
And any incidents that happened to you?
Not there, no. We was there. We used to get the odd shelling, just to keep us awake, you know. Where I was in Maastricht, but no actual contact. That would be in possibly about middle of January. But we was there for about 4 to 5 weeks. Then we came out on rest into a little village outside of Louvain, about 2 or 3 miles outside. We was billeted with families, you know. There was 4 of us in this house. And it was just a very tiny village with cobbled streets, narrow roads. By that time, I'd got pally with her, which was the kid who I said was through the war, a chap called Harry McGar. He's from Manchester, actually, a Lancashire kid. We were great pals, actually, you know. We used to dig in together. If we had to dig in, we always dug in. That was little two-man slit trenches. And where was unrest, there was 4 of us in this bedroom. There was 2 big double beds. This family slept in the front room, man and wife. And they had 2 daughters. One would be about 12 and the other one about 6 or 7, like, you know. And Harry McGar, he got called. He had to go home on compassionate leave. I think he lost one of his parents where I was on rest. And
you mean to the bombing? To bombing?
I don't know whether it was the bombing or whether he just died. I never found that out. But the only incident we had there, we had one of our lads got killed there, actually. We didn't do much. We was on rest. We sometimes had a little bit of. The sergeant major took us out on a little bit of drill now and again, like, but mainly it was just rest, you know. But while I was there, our armaments, apart from a rifle, we used to carry 2 grenades in our pouches, the old Mills 36 pineapple, and the concussion grenade, house clearing grenade, which was a plastic grenade, about 6 inches high or more, not quite as thick as a mug, or a glass, a half glass, which had a screw top, and when you undid this cap off, it had a tape on, about 6 or 8 inches, with a piece of lead on one end. As you threw it, it unwound and then exploded with a great bang. It was mainly the bang, the concussion. And we was getting rid of these. So to get rid, our sergeant took us on out into the fields, put a bucket about 30 yards away, and you put maybe a tanner in those days, in a kitty, and the old platoon, and you had gauze, and the one who got this grenade into the bucket, the nearest, got the kitty. Now the problem was, a lot, most of them exploded, but the Mr. and this, whoever was in charge, I don't know, you can't say it was his fault and blame anybody really, like, but we didn't know until later. And what happened was, our cookhouse was just down the road, about 200 yards from the main part of the village where we was all billeted in different houses. And we had to walk there, collect our tea or dinner in our mess tins, take it back to the home and have it there, like. Well, this one night, certain night, we was having our meal and we heard this violent explosion. When we were all rushed out, what had happened was, one of the lads, he must have been billeted with a family who had a horse, and it was like a little farm trap. And he was sat on it with one of the young daughters of this family. And as he was going through, one of these young girls had stopped him. He'd only be about maybe 9 or 10. And as he'd pulled up, this little girl had handed him one of these grenades. She must have found it, because you know what kids are, they'd have been watching you while he was out doing this job, like. And as he'd taken it off her, it went off. Blew him off the trap. The horse, the young girl, she was all right, strangely enough. The horse and cart went clattering away, as you can understand. He was laid on the floor, because he was just outside where our billet was. Laid on the floor, both his hands blown off, his stomach and his face blinded him. And that was one of the tragedies what we came across.
Did he die?
Oh yes, he went to Brussels hospital in Brussels, and he lasted 3 days. But that was an introduction to war for us, to the war, because all us reinforcements had never seen anything like that at the time, you see. But I have his name on our casualty list. Did he say the casualty list? Did Ernie show you it? Yeah.
No.
He's on there, you know. Yeah. But after 2 weeks, on the Sunday of the 25th of February, we boarded the trucks and went through to the bridge battle, which was the big one, Chadnoff.
Can you tell me what your personal memories of that are, please?
Well, my memories were travelling these trucks all, from about 10 o'clock in the morning till about, might have been 9 o'clock. but was going through the main battle areas and to seeing all the main the villages and the towns all bombed and shelled and nothing but ruin. Fields full of dead horses and the cattle. There were the legs in the air, and that was a thing, was animals. Poor animals being killed. seeing where tank battles and passing those and seeing tanks with the turrets blown off and the tracks blown off, passing areas where the Germans had blown the dams of the dikes and rivers and going through mud where they'd had to lay these metal plates to let the transport get through. And Tim, we finally reached this desert. Well, yeah, then we passed a place called Gok, where there had been a big battle, and it was still going on, actually. You could see Gok alight and hearing all the sound of battle, the artillery and machine guns. And that was when we knew we was getting near the front. Because going there, we was, you know, the NCOs in the trucks were saying, let's have a song, lads, and was all singing all these war songs like Roll Out the Barrel. And as you got nearer the front, the singing had died off, you know, and then you knew you was heading for it. And we stopped at these, in the country, at these, in a big field where they had these tents, just the roofs on the tents, because by that time it was snowing and hailing and belting down with sleet and everything. We stopped there, off the trucks. We had a meal, the old corned beef stew and veg. And by about 11 o'clock time, the party, we relieved the 51st Island Division then. And they come to lead us into their take over their positions. Well, it was pitch black, going through the forest, holding the bayonets of the man in front, going down the ditch as you were slipping in the mud. It was terrible, actually. We had our ponchos on, you know, ground sheets, which was made of poncho in them days. You were laddered up with mud. Anyway, we finally reached their position, a little clearing in the forest, and their dugouts was there. And of course, our NCOs was giving us where we had to go, which slit trench we had to go in. And I was with Harry, my mate, Harry McGar. We was in the slit trench, got in there, stood two. You know, we had to stand two for so many hours during the night, no sleep, and so we stood down, whereas one had to keep awake, where you could have a couple of hours keep at bottom. But everything was quiet in the area at that time, although you could hear explosions and artillery in the distance, you know. Very scary time for me at that time, you know. Then daylight, everything quiet down. Oh, just the odd artillery over, the old Nebelwerfers, you know, morning minis. They'd just send maybe a couple of times during the night, just to let you know they was there. You could hear them going over top, like. Then that was Sunday night, that, when we took over the 25th. 26th of Monday, it was just, you know, doing nothing, like, just in your slit trench. No movement, you couldn't move around because there were snipers about, like. Tuesday morning, we had an O group where we gathered round in a little dip, the platoon, and the officer, he had a lump of board or something, and then he was telling us what our duties was for that day, which was, he explained we had five positions to take. The first position we have was, it was this farmhouse in the middle of a ploughed field where he just mentioned snipers. That was the first objective. Then there was either three or four more. We had to clear a wood, cross a road, and then I think we were supposed to come to the bridge then, which was the main object. See, it was a converging attack from the four companies. We was on a platoon strength. So we made our way through to our start point, which was the edge of the wood. I think we got there about 9 o'clock in the morning then. So we got the edge of the wood where you could see the farmhouse. The farmhouse would be maybe 200, 300 yards away. It was a big area, all fields by that time. Woods on the left, woods on the right, a row of trees leading up to this farmyard in the middle of this area. Possibly about half a mile away, woods again. But a big expanse of fields and plough fields and that. About 9 o'clock, we, three sections in the platoon, our section was the first section to get across to this farmhouse. We started off when the whistle went, while the other two sections was given covering fire. We were going across, of course, which was a fatal thing. You always seemed to get close in. You always wanted to be close till you get orders from the NCO. Spread out, lads, you've got to spread out. Well, you were slipping out. There was a ploughed field with about 18-inch furrows. Frosty, it'd been freezing during the night. You couldn't keep your feet. You was falling down all over the place, which I imagine was pretty good, because you weren't giving no target for snipers. Because everything, you know, bloody explosions and firing going on, because our lads was giving covering fire. We're getting fired up from the house and from wherever snipers was. Could I just stop there, please? I want you to...